Are you someone who's marveled at the Indian mounds of southern Wisconsin? Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Bob Birmingham is back with us again. He is a former professor in the Department of Anthropology at the UW. He's the author of four books on the archaeology of Wisconsin, including his latest edition of Indian Mounds of Wisconsin. I've had a chance to take a look at it. I have his original version of it, and this is a nice little update. And we're going to learn about the book a bit and about how these mounds were created, also hear about the people and cultures that created them. Bob will also, I think, teach us about the significance behind these ancient monuments and their unique shapes. Maybe there's an Indian mound in your community. What do you want to know about those landforms? Love to hear from you. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And we'll also take questions and comments on our Facebook page as well. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Bob Birmingham, welcome back. Good to have you with us. Been a while.
Great to be here. Oh, yes, it has been a while.
Yeah, it sure has. And it's nice to... And what did I do with a copy of your book? Well, it's here somewhere. But I really enjoyed the updates on this are really quite nice.
Yeah, and a major part of that is due to my co-author Amy Rosebrough, who is an expert on especially the effigy mounds that are very distinctive to southern Wisconsin. In fact, most of them are found here in southern Wisconsin. So that greatly helped in putting together a new update, as well as many new studies that have taken place since 2000 in the original book, as well as a lot of technological advances.
Yeah, the digital the photos in the book are quite striking.
Yeah, and we have used a new technology. Actually, it's called LIDAR, which is imaging taken from a satellite or an airplane. And it's different from an aerial photograph in that a laser is used to map the surface of the ground and only the surface of the ground, and that is it sort of goes through vegetation. So for the first time, we can see the exact layout of spectacular mound arrangements that were usually obscured by vegetation, and you could only use flat maps, which like we did in the first.
Yeah.
But now some of the concepts that we talked about over the years, such as how the native people use a natural topography to arrange these ceremonial mounds, we can show those so visibly. Yeah. You could see these in three dimensions.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to go on and explain because people can
see
that. And this whole LIDAR imaging is literally transforming archaeology around the world. Down in Central America, for example, they're finding whole new cities that were obscured by jungles, you know,
and so on. So cool.
So it is very hard to keep up on now because this, like all technology, changing science is just a continuous flow, so it's hard to keep up.
And, you know, there are so many mounds in Wisconsin, and actually compared to other states, if I'm not mistaken, why are there so many mounds clustered, especially in the southern part of the state, and usually near lakes and rivers?
No, you're absolutely right. Native peoples constructed more things that we call Indian mounds in what is now the state of Wisconsin than any place else in the United States, and I guess you'd have to say the world by extension. And exactly why this area is still kind of a mystery, but we can relate it to, especially with regard to the effigy mounds, which were built roughly 1,000 years ago to 1,500 years ago. At that time, the southern Wisconsin and adjoining states was literally the most productive area in terms of food resources in the whole mid-continent.
Yeah.
Lakes, rivers, the oak savanna, which were extremely attractive to deers, And so one correlation we have made is at the time of the effigy mounds were making, this was the most productive area around, and especially with deer.
Yeah.
Archaeological excavations, we have found, I mean, despite the period, for the last 5 or 6,000 years, tend to be show us that the people ate deer,
and more deer.
Yeah. And so the impression we get is that at one point deer was so common, it was almost like having domesticated animals. So that's one explanation, is just a productive area that allowed for, therefore, large population growth, and then developing ceremonial complexes to help bind together people to avoid violence.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Tom in Stockbridge has a question for you, so let's go there. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning. Really a fascinating show. I'm particularly interested in the mounds as I walk by them at County McCounty Park near Stockbridge and High Cliff Park up by Sherwood.
Yep. The whole... that whole area is along the Niagara Escarpment, and there are clusters of mounds all through the Niagara Escarpment area that seem to have been particularly attractive to the Native Americans as a topographic feature. The mounds that you're talking about heavily emphasize water symbolism. Many of the mounds are what Native people call water spirits or underground water panthers, and are associated with water bodies such as Lake Winnebago along the Niagara Escarpment. So the Native people found these attractive places. Most of the mounds there are of this effigy mound era, when people were building burial mounds in the form of animals and supernatural beings. These were ceremonial complexes, not just burial places, but ceremonial complexes, and they tended to build the forms that are associated with the nearby geographic features. So these water spirits tend to be associated with water. In other places,
sure.
You find high areas where birds are more common, and so on. So they saw the environment differently than we do. They saw it as places where spirits live and dwell. And through the making of these effigy mounds, they were actually drawing out the spirits and then burying people there, we presume, to carry the dead into the spirit world.
Very interesting. Thanks a lot, Tom, for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, our guest today, Bob Birmingham, isn't that interesting, talking with him about the Indian mounds of Wisconsin? I'm really happy to have him with us today. And he's going to be staying right through our news break and on into the next part of our program. Michelle Johnson joins me as well here in our year-end membership drive. And, you know, she's here to help me tell you about your support. Your support is really vital to all of the programs on WPR, and that's why we're here to ask for your gift right now at 2017 comes to an end, and we look forward to starting 2018 strong. So make the programs you rely on possible. You do it when you give at WPR.org or at 888 202 2552. And Michelle?
Hi, thank you so much, Larry. You've been enjoying this conversation this morning about the history of Effigy Mounds in Wisconsin, and we thank you for listening. Now, Jake, we want you to take just a few minutes to make conversations like this possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're looking for about 15 pledges in the next 4 or 5 minutes here. Your gift right now, so important. Support the programs you rely on every day.
We are halfway there, halfway to our goal. Thank you if you've already given. And if you haven't, the time is right now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
At Wisconsin Public Radio, we ask you to decide how much to give. And no matter what you choose, you get 24 hours a day of news, talk, music, and entertainment in return. That's a great deal. Where do you wish you could get that deal?
I'd love to go to the record store and name my price for a lot of the albums I see.
If I could pick and choose for shoes, that would be fantastic.
Netflix, streaming options, music, and a weekend cocktail, too.
During this pledge drive, we ask you to contribute as generously as you can. And unlike with other things, you'll always be the one to decide how much to give.
You can do that by going to WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Larry Mueller here with Michelle Johnson, raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio, all the programs you enjoy, on the air. And I don't care if your pledge is $10 a month or $100 a month. We appreciate and we count on your gift.
We do. New members are important to Wisconsin Public Radio, too. So a big thank you to all the first-time donors who have pledged so far this hour.
If you've never given before, know that your new membership keeps Wisconsin Public Radio strong, a reliable station you can depend on. And again, you decide the amount, $10 or $20 a month, for example, and then just go ahead and give. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
You know, once in a while, you actually get more than you pay for, and WPR is one place where that's true every single day. Consider a gift of $2 a day to support the radio programs that you love.
Actually, it's hard to buy much for $2 these days, but at Wisconsin Public Radio, $2 a day creates a lot of learning, a lot of music, and news. That works out to $60 a month. You can make that gift at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552. Have we made any progress?
We're getting there. We're getting there. We have 15 more pledges to get before the top of the hour here, before news time, but I think we can do it. We're asking you right now to go to WPR.org and just call us, 888-202-2552, and make a pledge right now at any amount, and you will help us continue on our way toward our goal.
It's the season of giving, so support the radio station you love and do something extra. You can choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or phoning 888-202-2552. You'll make a difference for WPR and those facing hunger in your area.
Yes, and you can join Christy from Oconomowoc, who says as a full-time artist, she spends a lot of time in her studio alone, but listening to WPR keeps her from being lonely. So, she says, people support the arts, buy art, and in a roundabout way, it supports WPR. Thank you so much, Christy, for listening and for making a contribution today. Be like Christy right now. Call us, 888-202-2552, or go online to WPR.org and make your pledge of support right now in this year-end fundraising campaign for Wisconsin Public Radio.
I see Robert from Madison also is making his gift for the Larry Mueller Show. Thank you so much, Robert. And thank you if you've already contributed. If you haven't, do it right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network. tell you what, we're having a lot of fun talking about the Indian Mounds of Wisconsin with our guest, Bob Birmingham, Emeritus Professor of Anthropology at UW-Waukesha. He is the author of four books on the archaeological history of Wisconsin, including his latest edition, second edition, with a lot of new things in it. It's titled Indian Mounds of Wisconsin. I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Bob, as I'm really enjoying looking, reading through the book again and sort of comparing it to the first edition. And frankly, even though I have the first edition, I'm really happy to have a copy of the second, because there's a lot of new things, as you talked about earlier. How do people get copies of the book?
The Indian Mounds of Wisconsin is published by the University of Wisconsin Press. So they can simply go to that website. Mm-hmm. And make an order through the University of Wisconsin Press website.
And local bookstores are going to have copies of it as well.
Yes, yep.
Absolutely. Well, Eugene and Viola has been waiting a bit here, so let's go there. Eugene, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Larry, and your guests. As you're coming out of Lafarge, now going south, the first right-hand turn you come to is Tunnelville Road. Just before you get to that, if you look to your right, there's the remains of, I think it was an Indian mound. When I was a kid, you could see the outline of it. Well, in 1971, they put a new highway through there, and they cut through the old railroad tunnel. They also went right straight through the Indian mound. Now, with new technology, would there be any way of determining what's left of that Indian mound?
Absolutely. And there may be updated information on the thing that you're talking about and what remains, because the Wisconsin Historical Society Office of State Archaeologists stays on top of this matter and has excellent records. And so I would advise you to call the Wisconsin Historical Society and talk to the folks in the Office of State Archaeologists. Describe the mound that you're talking about, and they can provide you with updated information on that mound, what was there, what remains, and certainly what you're referring to is sort of the new technology, the LIDAR. If there are preserved remains, they're likely to show up in those images. But again, the Office of State Archaeologists could tell you all about that.
Oh, there we go. Thank you for calling. Sean in Portage, you're next. Hi, Sean.
How you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Hey, I was wondering if your guest was familiar with some effigy mounds that are on the northeast shore of Pleasant Lake. Up by Coloma?
Yes, just generally speaking, that area has a lot of mounds, but I can't offhand tell you exactly about that mound group.
Now, is that mound group included in your book, perhaps?
Not all mounds are described, you know, generally. But again, if you're interested in specific information, call to the Wisconsin Historical Society can give you the exact information.
Yeah.
But there were something like 15,000 to 20,000 mounds that were in Wisconsin at one time. So obviously we can't describe in a general way, but we do summarize and we do look at ones that are particularly good examples of the different mound eras.
Mm-hmm. I did have a book from the University of Wisconsin that was published in like 1948, and it described them, but I can't seem to find the book again.
1940, go ahead.
It was from the University of Wisconsin, and it described a bunch of effigy mounds. One of them, I do remember one was a panther, and one, I think it was a star or like a crescent moon.
And I can't
40s.
Think.
That wouldn't have been Aldo Leopold, would it?
No. Oh, no. It was an archaeology book, though.
Yeah.
I can't think of it offhand.
I got one more question.
Sure.
Where did they get the dirt from? Because I've never seen any big holes around them.
Well, that's a good question. The effigy mounds themselves were earth sculptures. That is, they didn't dig holes and pile up dirt. What they did was to scrape with small hand tools the surrounding dirt, basically the topsoil,
okay,
and the subsoil, and actually form the mound so that it wouldn't mar the landscape.
Oh.
And the mounds seemed to be, these spirit mounds seemed to be coming out of the earth rather than plopped on top of it. So that is really unique in terms of monument building, and supports our contention that through rituals, basically these animals and supernatural beings were actually being brought back to life as perceived by the native people. And again, the people buried in the mounds then would be accompanied their spirit ancestors, presumably to the afterlife. So we don't see burrow areas around effigy mounds ever, and they just once you start looking, you see how perfectly they blend in with the natural landscape. Many mounds are in fact difficult for the casual observer even to see because they blend so well into the landscape, because again they were sculpted from surrounding dirt rather than piled high.
Very interesting. Thank you very much, Sean. Appreciate your call. Joan in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, Larry, before I say anything, don't you dare quit. You are our last last pioneer on television. I mean, I started with Professor Gordon and let's see. And you have to hang in there. But my question, we have a family bed and breakfast, Thunder Valley Inn, on Highway 13, just west of the Dells. And supposedly, Chief Yellow Thunder grew up and lived on that farm. But beyond that, about 4 more miles, where I grew up, my job was to get the cows from pasture at night. And they were taken to this field. In the back of the woods, there were ponds and lots of bumps, as I used to think they were. And I would find many, many arrowheads. And I just wondered if you knew what the history of that was. Was it related to Chief Yellow Thunder, or was it something else? Were those Indians?
Yeah, if there were mounds, these would probably date 1,000 years before Yellow Thunder.
Wow.
So this is ancient Native history. In more modern times, or more recent times, Native people had changed their customs and had ceased to build mounds as burial places. So it's unlikely to be directly connected with Yellow Thunder, although many of us believe that the Ho-Chunk in general are among the descendants of the effigy mound people. The arrowheads that you find, the chips and so on, also would be ancient. At the time of Yellow Thunder, they would not have been making stone tools, for example, or ceramic pots. They had incorporated basically the broader American material culture into their lifestyle. Yellow Thunder is of considerable interest, of course. Ho-Chunk stories talk about him being removed from the Dells area and sent out to the Western Reservation several times. And he kept walking back.
Yeah, kept walking back.
He knew a good spot when he saw it.
Yeah, And according to one story, at one point, that even beat back the people that took him out to the Nebraska reservation. And they finally gave up and let him stay.
There is one little mound on highway, the old Highway 16 from the Dells to Portage.
Yep.
On the left side, now down near Otto's Tavern. That is sort of been preserved, but that wasn't the group that I was thinking of.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah. Well, in the same area near Wisconsin Dells, and I believe it's on Highway 16. But the whole chunk themselves now own a fairly spectacular effigy mound group just east of the Wisconsin Dells that is right along the highway. It used to be a wayside.
Yes.
Is that
yes.
it? Oh, yeah.
Oh, they own that. Huh.
Yeah. The Department of Transportation deeded over to the whole chunk because the area was no longer a wayside, a highway wayside. And the Ho-Chunk had considerable interest, and the Ho-Chunk have done an absolutely magnificent job at maintaining the mounds, which are quite spectacular, include bear mounds, a very large bird or thunderbird mound, snake mounds, water spirit mounds. It's almost a perfect representation.
Well, it's about time we treated the Indians with a little more respect. We keep
isn't that true? Yes.
Out.
Yes, and so that's and they do invite visitors for respectful, observation. So it's worth seeing, and again, we're very happy that there's such collaboration between the state and Native nations.
Miss Chris, thank you.
And remember, hang in there.
All right, I will. But I was going to make one other comment. A lot of the quote-unquote arrowheads that people find that are like 2 inches long or so, those are really spearheads, I've been told.
Well, what are commonly called arrowheads are of many different types. Some are actually knives.
Hmm.
Many, in fact, are knives. We have taken the liberty in some cases to inform people that changes their perspective on archaeological sites because they have said, well, we found a lot of arrowheads, so there must have been a war here, And we point out that most of them are knives that would have been used by women, and this was a domestic site, So people had a little bit different perspective on the nature of Native American society, and whereas most of these stone tools were being used for just fairly common domestic rather than warfare. But there were spear points, of course, up until about 500 AD. The bow and arrow was not used.
Yeah.
And it was used, spears were used instead. The true arrowheads are only about an inch long, and are small triangular because velocity is what mattered.
Yeah.
And so you had the bow and arrow, and you could not mount a very large piece of stone on an arrow shaft. It wouldn't go anywhere, go a few feet and fall down. So the true arrowheads are very small, triangular, and those would necessarily date after 500 AD. Larger spear points are mostly dating before that, even as far back as 13,000 years.
Oh. Always interesting. Bob Birmingham, our guest today, author of 4 books on the archaeological history of Wisconsin, including his latest edition. It's the second edition of Indian Mounds of Wisconsin, and I hope you get a chance to take a look at it because there's a lot of new information in the second edition book, and you're going to want to have to take a look at it for sure. Always appreciate having Bob stop by. It's always fun to have Michelle Johnson stop by as well. She just comes waltzing in here to sit down with me every now and then to talk about our year-end membership drive. It's our single largest source of funding, listener support. That means in this season of giving, your gift is so important. So I hope you'll take a few minutes right now to support the programs you count on with your year-end gift. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
We want to thank everyone who pledged this last hour. Thank you so much. Our goal now for the next half hour, actually for the next 10 minutes or so, we're about halfway to our goal. We need to hear from five more folks. That's you and four of your friends and neighbors around the great state of Wisconsin to make our goal for this half hour. You can do it. Help us get there right now.
We've been talking a lot on Wisconsin Public Radio about taxes and the new tax plans and all of that. And so you may be thinking about tax dollars and thinking that your tax dollars, federal and state, already support Wisconsin Public Radio. And you know what? You're right. They do. And we thank you for that.
We do thank you for that. And we want you to know that listener support is actually the biggest piece of our operating budget. You make the difference. You make the quality and the variety of programs on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Because this radio service matters to you, we are asking you to make a personal contribution right now to pay for the programs that you listen to and you enjoy each day. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
During This year-end membership drive, we have a special thank you gift. You can ask for one of the food bank gifts. There are options available at $10 or $20 a month. And your thank you gift does a whole lot, Michelle.
It does so much good. And we know that our listeners are such good-hearted and big-hearted, community-minded folks just like yourself. So your contribution right now to Wisconsin Public Radio of $10 or $20 a month will go really twice as far. It will be two gifts in one, because you can ask us to provide meals to a Wisconsin food bank near you. Get started right now with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, one of the things that I really enjoy about this program and the other many of the other programs that we have here on Wisconsin Public Radio and the Ideas Network, it's a statewide conversation. It's so much fun to hear from people from all over the state who get a chance to hear from experts and ask them questions and learn from the interesting and diverse experiences of everybody from around the state, all our listeners. It's so much fun.
It's so much fun, and it's so amazing every single day. I ask you to sort of reflect on the last few minutes, whether you've been listening to the whole show today with us or just for the last few minutes. I am willing to bet that you learned something new in just the last hour. And what this means is that you go out into the world a more well-rounded person each day, full of engaging topics to think about and talk about. Because you listen to this radio service and because you value being well-informed, we're asking you to make a pledge to the station that keeps you connected. Do it right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you might consider sharing your experience and appreciation of the lifelong learning you get from WPR by making a 9XM Leadership Circle gift. That gift would need to be $100 a month or more, or $1,200 or more every year. It provides an important piece of funding for the programs you rely on.
Each of us does our part. Let's work together to build this powerful resource that benefits so many people throughout Wisconsin. Make your leadership gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
At Wisconsin Public Radio, we ask you to decide how much to give. And no matter what you choose, you get 24 hours a day of news, talk, music, and entertainment in return. That's a great deal. Where do you wish you could get that deal?
I'd love to go to the record store and name my price for a lot of the albums I see.
If I could pick and choose for shoes, that would be fantastic.
Netflix, streaming options, music, and a weekend cocktail, too.
During this pledge drive, we ask you to contribute as generously as you can. And unlike with other things, you'll always be the one to decide how much to give.
You certainly will. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Larry Mueller here with Michelle Johnson, raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs you enjoy on the air. And your gift might be $10 a month, might be $100 a month. We appreciate and count on every gift.
And every gift matters. Help pay for the programs that you depend on. We are looking for just three more pledges.
Only
in the
three.
Next 3 minutes. Yes.
One per minute.
Almost there. We can do it with your help. Make your donation right now. Don't delay. Support the programs that you enjoy at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
Your time is valuable. We know that. We value it. So giving to Wisconsin Public Radio takes just a few minutes of your time. You just give us your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay.
It's quick, it's easy, and your gift right now, well, it really helps. Take a few minutes right now to support the station you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you can make an ongoing gift, $15, $20 a month perhaps, whatever amount is right for you. Set it up on your credit card if you want, or your debit card, or better yet, right from your bank account. It's what we call a sustaining gift, and the beauty of it, well, you don't have to remember to renew your support every year.
No, that's good. That's very good. Your support will be as consistent as your WPR listening month after month, year after year. So become a sustainer right now. Set up your ongoing gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're going to be leaving you here in just a few seconds, but I want to thank you if you've already given. If you haven't given, this is a wonderful time to do it. You can help us make our goal for this a half-hour time period. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.